Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC. And so most of these sermons are from me.
Did you hear it? The answer to our question? Jesus gets in the boat and goes to a deserted place in response to learning about John the Baptist's death. John the Baptist, who leapt for joy in his mother's womb as Mary, pregnant with Jesus, approached her relative Elizabeth. John, the one who was tasked with preparing the way for Jesus, the one who baptized Jesus in the Jordan River, that John has been killed. And he hasn't just been killed. John the Baptist has been arrested and then executed by the Roman Empire because his work to prepare the way for Jesus had been too disruptive, too confrontational. And so now, in the midst of learning about John's death, Jesus, it would appear, needs time to grieve. How could he not? Grief is a natural response to death, and we must take time to process our grief, although sometimes, most of the time, in fact, we probably don't do that as well as we ought to. Brené Brown puts it this way. She says, "When a loved one dies, grief moves in. It becomes a part of your family. It sits at your dining room table. It attends every family holiday. It influences your kids, and it impacts your ability to parent. You can try to wait it out, thinking that if you don't make space for grief, it will eventually leave, but this never works, because grief will just cram itself into corners and closets and all the other empty spaces it can find." And unfortunately for Jesus, as he's trying to grieve, the crowds aren't really here for that. They're not having it. Try as he might to find some solitude, to find some space to process his grief, the crowds are still longing for more time with him. They want to hear more. They want to learn more. They want to be in his presence. And when they discover that he's heading for the other side of this body of water, they run along the shoreline, trying to beat him to where he's going to dock. I've got to admit that if it had been me in the boat, and I saw a crowd of people running along the shoreline, and I'm sitting in my own grief, I'd probably pull the paddle back out, start rapidly trying to go in another direction, anywhere but there. But Jesus lets the boat run up on shore and lets the crowd press in around him. And in the midst of his own grief, in the midst of his own woundedness, he responds with compassion. Nadia Boltz-Weber, an Episcopalian priest, preached these words at her dear friend Rachel Held Evans' funeral just a few months ago. She says, "I've heard it said that grief is the price we pay for having loved. And so, yeah, I think this love-soaked grief of ours is holy to God." She continues and she says, "Because while there are those who would reduce the Christian faith to moralism and delusional positivity, we know that the God we worship is not a shiny-toothed motivational speaker churning out cheerful memes in times of suffering, because the God we worship is a crucified and risen God, which is to say, we worship a God that is not unfamiliar with darkness. A God who comes close to those who mourn. A God who comes close to those who stand outside of tombs. A God who is not far off, but who is as close as that choppy breath that falters in your weeping." And so when Jesus gets to shore, even while he is in the midst of his own grief, even while he is becoming still more familiar with the darkness and the woundedness and the pain that comes with loss, he recognizes that there are those in the crowd around him who are also suffering, who are also wounded. And he is moved to compassion. Russ has said it several times from this pulpit, but the Greek word that we translate into compassion really means something more along the lines of his guts churned for them. If that's not a visceral enough way to phrase that, I don't know. But Jesus has this visceral, this physical reaction to the anguish around him, to the spiritual and physical and emotional wounds of the people in the crowd. So he heals them. He teaches them. He feeds them. In those moments, Jesus' compassion is not hindered by his grief. It's emboldened by it. The more I read this text, the more I wonder about how Jesus was able to do that. To hold his own grief with such care that it didn't spill out all over everyone else, but instead it fueled his ability to care for those around him. There's a story in the Jewish Talmud. It's the book that interprets and teaches about the law for people of the Jewish tradition. And this story is an exchange between a rabbi and the prophet Elijah. It goes like this. Rabbi Yahshua ben Levi came upon Elijah the prophet, and he asked Elijah, "When will the Messiah come?" Elijah replied, "Go and ask him yourself." Rabbi questioned, "Well, where is he?" And Elijah says, "He's sitting at the gates of the city." "How shall I know him?" the rabbi questioned. And Elijah said, "He is sitting among the poor, covered with wounds. The others unbind all their wounds at the same time and then bind them up again. But he unbinds one at a time and binds it up again, saying to himself, 'Perhaps I shall be needed. If so, I must always be ready, so as not to delay for a moment.'" When I was in my early teens, about 17 or 18 years ago, a noise startled me out of my sleep one night in the middle of the night. It sounded like someone was crying. So I got out of my bed to do some investigating. And as I walked out of my room into the hallway, I noticed that the door to my parents' room was open and that the light was on. And as I got closer and I looked in the room, I saw my mom sitting on the edge of the bed. She was crying. She was crying really hard. My dad stood on the other side of the bed, quietly talking to someone on the phone. It turned out that my mom's younger brother had passed away that night. My dad was on the phone with one of my mom's older brothers who had called us with the news. I only ever met my Uncle Stephen a handful of times, and it was always kind of in passing. I think it was because my mom tried to shield my younger sister and I from his struggle with the addiction that eventually took his life. But while I don't have many memories of him, I'll never forget how my Uncle Pete, the one who had called that night, took care of the rest of the family in the aftermath of Uncle Stephen's death. He was everywhere that he needed to be, and then some. Calling, visiting my mother's side of the family that is spread out all over the country. Checking in, meeting needs. All while dealing with his own grief. You see, Uncle Pete bound his wounds one at a time, with the understanding that that made him available to bind the wounds of those around him should he be needed. His compassionate response to his own grief was to meet the needs that he saw as others grieved too. It seems that for Jesus and for my Uncle Pete, grief was the wound that stirred up their compassion. It inspired them to meet the needs they saw around them. It compelled them to take action. Grief was the wound that turned into a source of healing power for other people. But I suspect that our wounds all might be a little different. Sure, there are definitely those of us here today whose wounds were formed by the slashing pain of grief that comes from losing a loved one, but maybe your wound was formed by loneliness, Maybe your wound was formed by betrayal. Maybe it was formed by rejection or addiction or abuse. Maybe it was formed by the trauma of someone else attempting to define your self-worth for you based on your race or your gender, your sexuality, or your physical ability. Maybe you have more than one. But whatever your wounds may be, what we see in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 14, in the text that Harry just read for us, is a model for allowing those wounds to be a source of healing for others. We all have the ability to do this because we all have the wounds for it. But first, it takes the intentional, difficult work of binding our own wounds up. We have to take the necessary steps for self-care. We have to get in our own boat. We have to paddle towards healing and wholeness. Will we get all the way there before we bump into a shore full of people? Probably not. But the good news is that God draws near to us in our own woundedness. God sits with us in our suffering and has compassion for us. And as we heal with God's help, as our wounds are bound up, we are called to step back out of the boat onto the shore. We are called to let our wounds empower our compassion and embolden our action. We are equipped by our own wounds to journey with others on the path to healing. A lot of you might know this. My favorite television show of all time is The West Wing. Hasn't been on for a minute now, but it's on Netflix, and that's really great. And in the second season, episode 10, titled Noel, Leo McGarry, the president's chief of staff, is having a conversation with his deputy chief of staff, Josh Lyman. And the conversation is around a traumatic event that happened that Josh has experienced, during which he was shot and almost killed. And since that moment, since that trauma, Josh has suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and he's asking big questions about whether or not he's even capable of keeping his job. And Leo, who's known for being a recovering alcoholic, tells Josh this story. He says, this guy is walking down the street when he falls into a hole, and the walls are so steep that he can't get out. A doctor is passing by, and the guy shouts out, hey, can you help me? And the doctor pulls out a prescription pad, writes a prescription, and throws it down in the hole and moves on. And then a priest comes along, and the guy shouts out, Father, I'm down in this hole. Can you help me out? And the priest writes a prayer down on a sheet of paper, throws it down in the hole, and moves on. And then a friend walks by. Hey, Joe, it's me. Can you help me out? And the friend jumps in the hole. And our guy says, are you stupid? Now we're both down here. And Joe says, yeah, but I've been down here before. I know the way out. After he tells the story, Leo looks Josh in the eyes and says, as long as I have a job, you have a job. You understand me? There is this determination within Leo, one that comes from an understanding of how his own wounds have begun to heal, one that comes from experiencing compassion himself as others have journeyed with him. That determination grounds him in a belief that he must be there for Josh in the midst of Josh's own woundedness. He knows that his wounds, though different, can provide a healing power for Josh. I'll be honest, I watched this episode again last night in preparation for this morning, and I can't help but wonder what it would look like for us if we had that same level of determination towards each other, if we exercised that level of compassion towards one another. Henry Nouwen was a theologian and an author. He wrote a book titled The Wounded Healer. It's where I borrowed the title for this sermon this morning. And he tells us that we have to do this work, and if we do this work, it requires three things of us. The first is vulnerability. He writes, "This service requires the willingness to enter into a situation complete with all the vulnerabilities one human being has to share with another. Doing this work well requires recognizing our own wounds, doing the work to bind them, and then being open and vulnerable enough to tell our story and to allow our wounds to heal those around us." The second thing that Nouwen says we must do is be courageous. And again, he writes, "When one has the courage to enter where life is experienced as the most unique and most private, one touches the soul of the community. When our vulnerability partners with our courage, we have the ability to recognize the depth of our community's need for healing, and we discover how we can work towards that healing." And the third thing is hospitality. As Nouwen writes, "Hospitality is the virtue that allows us to break through the narrowness of our own fears and to open our houses to strangers with the intuition that salvation comes to us in the form of a tired traveler. Hospitality makes anxious disciples into powerful witnesses, makes suspicious owners into generous givers, and makes closed-minded sectarians into interested recipients of new ideas and insights." Just as Jesus fed the people who had followed him to a deserted place, when we are hospitable, we draw new faces into our community. And in doing so, we reveal to them a new way of being together. And also, in hearing those new stories and exploring their wounds, we might also find more healing. When Jesus got back to shore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, and he healed them. And now, the God of compassion is calling on us to do the same thing, to be vulnerable, courageous, hospitable, compassionate. God is calling us to be the wounded healers that the world needs, that each of us needs.
So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.